Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrars Podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions related to the management systems certification industry. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjr.com/webinar or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Good afternoon. Welcome to today's webinar on the subject of RIOS 2016. My name is Austin Matthews. I am the EHS Program Manager with PJR. I have a brief overview of today's agenda on this slide. We'll cover some of the benefits and drivers to certification to a standard like RIOS. We will cover the key requirements of the standard, as well as a general standard overview. We'll go clause by clause for at least the majority of the requirements to give some more details as to what the RIOS standard includes. We'll close with a summary of the certification process for anyone who is pursuing or considering initial certification to the standard. And we will allow some time for questions at the end. Benefits of certification vary by standard, by company, by location, by industry, a number of factors. Some of the common themes, especially for RIOS certification, would be the improvement of the organization's quality, environmental health, and safety performance, which is commonly abbreviated QEH&S, and to be able to minimize those QEH&S risks, which can be costly to businesses. Material sourcing and outsourcing controls are another benefit of certification. Management commitment and employee engagement levels can be increased or affected by certification to RIOS. Being able to advertise certification can provide a competitive advantage and/or improve an organization's public image. Beyond the competitive advantage and improved public image, we can see some financial benefits. Not only perhaps winning some bids over companies that don't hold a similar certification perhaps, but some industries or locations may see insurance premium reductions for having, for example, a health and safety certification. The standard represents a framework for meeting customer and/or regulatory requirements. The standard itself represents a commitment to responsibly managing recyclables. So being able to advertise that same commitment in conjunction with the certification is another benefit. The standard can also be integrated with other standards. Some of you may be familiar with the R2V3 standard, for example. At a high level, the key requirements in RIOS 2016 are leadership, proactivity and risk management, the outcomes of the management system, communication and awareness requirements for a number of groups, including stakeholders and customers, and the concept of change management. And there is some overlap there with change management and proactivity. Copies of the standard can be obtained by contacting ISRI or RIOS. That's one piece of information that I'd like to share. I get that question a lot. How do we obtain a copy of the standard? Some other general information I like to share during this webinar are some requirements that are found perhaps within the certification program itself rather than the standard. So sometimes clients may not be aware of some of these requirements, but they do affect RIOS clients as they are flowed through the CB the certification bodies having to meet these requirements. So I like to include these as well. Some of those nuanced requirements include the need to close recertification audit NCRs with effective implementation evidence. Even minor NCRs, where for other standards, we may be able to accept a plan of action written in future tense for things that the company plans to do to close the finding, which we would typically follow up on at the following year. Certain types of audits for Rios, those NCRs need to be fully closed, meaning that the actions or activities are fully implemented rather than just planned out. It also requires that the auditor be replaced each recertification audit. So every recertification audit to Rios 2016 will have to be performed by a new auditor. A client is required to maintain an annual Rios membership. And the Rios certification program dictates sampling of certain requirements annually. These differ a little bit from, for example, ISO 14001. And those differences would include annual sampling of competency and training requirements, communication requirements, monitoring and measurement, and operational processes against which NCRs were issued during the prior 2 years instead of the typical 1 year. Okay, so getting into some of the key requirements, we'll go through not necessarily every clause of the standard, but enough to give you a quick overview in the time allotted to this webinar. The introduction of the standard has notes that provide guidance, but the introduction section is not in and of itself auditable. Clause 1 contains general requirements or requirements of a more general nature. For example, section 1.1 addresses scope, and it includes a requirement for the organization to consider actions of outside providers within their scope. Consider is not the same as include, but the footprint activities should account for or include outside provider activities. And an example of an outside provider for Rios 2016 might be a contractor. Section 1.1.1, Rios outcomes, outlines the implementation criteria, intended outcomes of the standard and the management system with a call for proactivity. And we'll see the concept of proactivity repeated several times throughout the standard and in these slides. 1.2 houses the infrastructure, quality, environmental health, and safety management system requirements. For example, 1.2 requires the assigning of responsibilities, a management representative, and requires that senior management be accountable. They have to be involved, they have to be committed to ensuring that the management system meets its intended outcomes. Sometimes that can mean allocation of resources. Sometimes it can mean communication of the importance of adhering to the system to employees from a, you know, top-down approach. Document and record keeping controls can be found in section 1.3. And if you're familiar with ISO 14001 at all, the concepts are similar. Clause 2 covers the policy requirements. These are the requirements related to evaluating impacts and risks, annual reviews, senior management commitment, and so on, to ensure that the policy includes all of the required elements. Clause 3 covers the Rios footprint, planning of the footprint, as well as identification of risks throughout Clause 3. Section 3.1 focuses on identifying the Rios footprint And again, we see a tone of proactivity here, or an expectation of proactivity. Assessing the footprint should include things like purchasing, source material acquisition, transport, and delivery. So not just what happens within the four walls or however many walls the building has, to think literally outside the box and think about what impact that the organization can have. It's also to include positive attributes, not just negative impacts. It's to be kept up to date, reviewed for changes, and assessed prior to making changes that could impact the management system. This is, again, where proactivity comes into play. We're not going to make a change and react to the impact that change has on the system. We're going to proactively assess how that change is likely to impact the system and control for it in advance to the best of our ability. 3.1 is broken down into a couple subclauses. 3.1.1 explores specifically the quality risks, things that affect product and or service quality. I've listed some examples to get you going there. And I've also included the definition of risk, which is the effect of uncertainty that can be positive or negative. 3.1.2 and 3.1.3 cover environmental and health and safety risks, respectively. And the additional requirements for each of those can be found in their respective subclauses. The standard also expects documentation of the ratings and controls to be included in the system. 3.1.4 focuses instead on legal requirements, and this would include any product requirements. And the controls, again, do need to be documented. . 3.1.5 focuses on product, service, and customer requirements. Again, we see a requirement to document what those requirements are, as well as methodologies for monitoring. Some examples: products, customer requirements, outsourced activities, and so on. Other stakeholder requirements are covered in 3.1.6. This requires the identification of who the stakeholders would be, as well as their respective requirements. Any controls need to be implemented, and this also needs to be reviewed annually. Stakeholder is also something defined within the standard, and I've included some examples here. Section 3.2 covers improvement planning. We see requirements to establish goals, plan how the goals will be achieved in 3.2.1 and 3.2.2, respectively. Change management is covered in 3.3. This requires a written plan to review the footprint for any relevant changes prior to implementing the change to the management system. So we did touch on this earlier when we were talking about proactivity. This is included in RIOS 2016 for the first time. It wasn't in the previous version of the RIOS standard, and this is really significant, this requirement to plan the changes out, written right into the standard. Clause 4 focuses on implementation requirements. 4.1 covers recycler knowledge, which includes competency requirements and awareness requirements. These are separated out into two subclauses. Competence 4.1.1 requires the organization to identify what the competency requirements are for their various positions or personnel or expectations, as well as to maintain records as evidence of competence and verify the effectiveness. Training is to be conducted to include the identified criteria. And this is all as relevant to the intended outcomes of the management system. Likely some personnel or positions or groups would have a greater likelihood to implement or to, excuse me, to affect the intended outcomes than others. 4.1.2 includes specific awareness topic requirements. Communication is covered in 4.2 in general, which requires documentation of communication plans. And then different types of communication are broken out across several various subclauses to include topics such as customer communication, supplier communication, outside supplier communication, and other types of external communication as well. I've listed some examples here to get you started. Operational controls are covered in 4.3. This covers a broad range of topics, including source materials, how supplier requirements or controls are implemented or relevant to the management system, and outsource providers, products, and or services. This is a concept similar to purchasing controls. What specifications have been documented? What controls are relevant? How can those products, services, or provisions potentially impact the quality, environmental health, and safety outcomes or management system? How are they evaluated? What do the records look like? How are they monitored? All things to consider for operational controls in RIOS. 4.4 covers quality controls. It requires the documentation of any specifications or criteria, worker instructions, and so on. These will vary by organization. So that's 4.4, and then 4.5 and 4.6 respectively cover environmental and health and safety controls as well. So there are some documentation requirements there. 4.7 houses the emergency preparedness requirements. This is the emergency plan and or the emergency response expectations of the organization. And there is a requirement to communicate these expectations in accordance with the communication requirements of clause 4.2. Clause 5 includes checking and corrective action. Looking at some of the subclauses here, we've got 5.1 that covers monitoring and measurement expectations. And there's a lot within 5.1. So there's required to be a monitoring and measurement plan with certain items or details that are required to be included. Certain requirements for detailing what will be monitored. There's also the annual quality, environmental health and safety compliance evaluation. This is to include legal requirements as well as stakeholder requirements, if applicable. There's also verbiage in subclause 5.1.2 about the competency of the person or people evaluating compliance. What makes them competent to do that activity? 5.1.3 covers the maintenance and calibration of monitoring equipment. There are requirements such as documentation of requirements, actions taken to address out-of-tolerance monitoring devices, and so on. 5.1.4 covers the monitoring and measurement results. So those outputs are required to be inputs in the management review meeting. or meetings management review process. 5.2 covers nonconformance and corrective and preventive actions. Again, we're not covering all of the subclauses here, so we'll jump to 5.2.2, which addresses incident investigations. I want to draw your attention to the fact that it requires investigation of all EHS incidents. And if you take a look at the definition, this includes near misses. Previous NCRs for two audit cycles will be reviewed for effectiveness instead of previously just one audit cycles. I mentioned that earlier on that general requirements slide. So instead of just looking at the previous year's NCRs, we have to go back 2 years for RIOS 2016. Clause 5.3 covers internal RIOS audits. Those are annual audit requirements. Although the full system evaluation must take place at least prior to certification and or recertification, it also requires a written plan. Clause 6 covers management review. In there, you find the required inputs and outputs as prescribed to be included in the management review process. I didn't list them all out on the slide. You can get a copy of the standard and review them and compare them to your management review process to assess what may be missing. I will summarize the certification process briefly for anyone who is considering pursuing initial certification and is not already familiar with what that process looks like. And then I will go see if we have any questions. The first step for pursuing certification to any standard is to get a copy of the standard. Next, you will establish quality environmental health and safety management system documentation to meet the requirements within the standard itself. Conduct any training that's required. Implement the various requirements in those documentations to meet the standard requirements, as well as conduct your internal audit, your compliance evaluation, and your management review. You will need a contract with a certification body such as Perry Johnson Registrars to conduct your audits. You'll complete both a stage one and a stage two audit, address any resulting nonconformities before a certificate can be issued. The stage one audit is primarily documentation review, evaluating your readiness to move on to stage two, while stage two is a full system audit of the entire standard and all of the organization's shifts and processes to assess conformity to the standard requirements. Any nonconformities do need to be resolved prior to certificate issuance, but once the certificate is issued, which is good for 3 years, you follow that with 2 years of surveillance audit cycles. These can be annual or semi-annual, depending on the client's contract. And unlike a stage two, they are not full system audits. Those would be considered partial system audits. We don't have to hit on every single requirement or every process for those surveillance audits. It would be a sampling. The third year in the cycle represents the recertification audit, which would again be a full system audit similar to the stage two, resulting in a new certificate good for another 3 years, starting the cycle over after any nonconformities have been resolved. If you haven't already done so, feel free to type in any questions that you may have. And I'm going to go ahead and go to the final slide that has some contact information on it for you. So again, my name is Austin Matthews. I am the EHS Program Manager with PJR. I can be reached through the main PJR line as well as email. If you are interested in a quote to pursue initial certification, our sales department is a great place to start, and I've included their phone number here as well. Okay, so far I'm not seeing any questions, but I will hang out for a moment or two in case someone is typing. Take your time. And again, a recording of today's webinar and a copy of the slides will be made available on PJR's website.